approved in the OMD, a wide variety of statistical seasonal adjustment measures. And no matter how you do it, you get a drop in unemployment, a significant drop since the first of the year. Now, Secretary Labor put out a statement that I think hit the thing pretty well. In effect, he said, well, the seasonal adjustment problems that we have affect the teenagers. They don't affect the rest of the labor force. So let's put the teenagers aside for a moment and just look at the backbone of the labor force. Adult males, married men supporting families. What's happened to their unemployment rate? There, our seasonal adjustment technique is pretty good. You don't have the big seasonal swings anyway. And there you've seen a decline of about 3.4% to 3.1%, about 3.0%. So that's a definite decline in unemployment. Looking at one other thing I might mention about many of these figures, particularly the GNP figures and the retail sales figures, which is striking, so it's a little aggravating. The first quarter GNP figure that was put out, the initial one that was put out, was 28.7 billion. We have been looking for something on the order of 33 to 35 billion. We thought would be darn good. So we were a little disappointed. I remember the day, Mr. President, we got that news. I happened to be in your office and my face fell. I was quite disappointed. Still a very strong show. A month later, that was revised to 30.8 as more information came in about what was going on. And a month later, in the figures just issued, it was revised to 32.4. They may not be through revising that figure yet, but I think the point is that we thought 33 to 35 would be great. And that's just about, we're just about in there. Now, in retail sales, we computed the last 13 times that figure has been revised by one way or another. 12 out of the last 13 times it's been revised upward. Now that's not because the statisticians are trying to be nasty about it or anything. It's just that as they get more information, the information comes in and confirms the strength of this thing. And you can see that in all sorts of ways. I suppose our most difficult problem is the problem of prices. Here, real improvement has been shown. Consumer's price index so far this year on the average has been going up at a little over 3%, whereas the same period last year it was around 6%. So that's an improvement. The GNP deflator, which is the broadest index, in the second quarter of this year, just announced, rose by 4.2%. That's the smallest quarter-over-quarter price increase since the first quarter of 1968. So that goes back a bit. We'll have another CPI announcement probably in a couple of days. I have no idea what that is. My guess is it'll be closer to the first 4 months of this year than to last one, but we'll see about that. Nevertheless, the problem of dealing with prices with inflation is an important, difficult problem. And it's for that reason, as the President has considered these matters, and keeping with that, as the Secretary of the Treasury announced a couple of weeks ago, for that reason, taking a long view, that you ask yourself, how much expansion do you want to put into the economy now, because of what it will produce a year, 2 years from now? Same kind of a problem really as was being discussed in foreign affairs. Well, that's sort of the general contour of the picture. I think what we have in place as far as the future is concerned is a lot of expansion built into the fiscal situation. There's a large government deficit in fiscal 71. We don't know exactly how large because we don't have the final figures yet. The fiscal 72 picture, you all know what was projected in February. You all know that congressional actions so far have increased that deficit something on the order of $7 to $8 billion. Probably the economy won't attain the GNP level that we projected, but it'll still be very strong. That will cause some loss in revenues. But anyway, there's a lot of fiscal expansion there. Monetary policy has been expansionist in recent months. What will the future be there versus the Federal Reserve's domain? But at any rate, so far this year, it's been expansionary. I think one of our big problems right at the moment is the area of labor disputes. And too much of that can disrupt things. And we've been working very hard on that in the administration. We had two breaks yesterday in the phone settlements. Kurt Townsend, I might say, our mediation service man, played a key role there. And in the Postal Service, they seem to have agreement. I might say on the Postal Service, the significant thing there is the agreement for changes in the way in which that tremendous outfit is managed that really gives some hope of improvements in productivity. And Redmond is very enthusiastic, even though he has had to pay through the nose in terms of the size of the settlement. Railroad situation is potentially the most disruptive. We know we can't stand a strike of any duration at all if it becomes nationwide. There is this two railroad strike on. In the negotiations, there has been real movement. Bill Ussery has performed very creatively there, as he has the Postal Service thing. And the railroad thing is still very touchy, but I think that's doable if we get any breaks. If not, I'm sure we'll be back to Congress. But again, I think this is one of those things where Congress has still not done anything about the legislation the President set up some time ago. The copper case, you think that's breaking. There's one settlement now. Two more companies are very intensive bargaining, and I would expect that by the end of the week there'll be further motion there, and basically I think that's going to be taken care of all right. The steel bargaining, of course, we don't know the outcome. The sessions have been going well. The local issues have been getting settled. We have a difficult problem on the West Coast, the longshore strike there. There the parties are far apart, and we don't have any good handles in that situation right at the moment. So that is a difficult one. The coal bargaining down the road is another potential threat. So these labor disputes are a problem. The levels of settlements are a problem. The thing that the President has been pounding on labor and management at the Productivity Commission meeting with steel leaders is how important it is to get these costs under control, to pay attention to productivity, and to recognize that the U.S. is in a competitive world, and we're going to have to sit up and take notice, roll up our sleeves, and do a job here. And I think he hit that very hard with the steel people and with the Productivity Commission generally. So that's something about our problems and prospects. I think overall, the picture of the economy is a very good one. And it's one in which strength is gathering. There's no doubt whatever that there's an expansion underway. All of the leading indicators point that. There's never been a time in history where there has been this much evidence of expansion, where that expansion has fouled out. So I think that we're definitely on the way up. And the problem is to sort of keep our cool and have the expansion go in a way that doesn't just reignite all of the inflationary fires all over again.
Mr. President,
I asked Mr. Schultz, I'm sure there was a recent article by Evans and Novak that indicated that in general, the spending was out of control in the federal government, that we would have a deficit in this fiscal year of in excess of $35 billion. Could you comment on that?
In fiscal year 71, which is in, but we don't have the figures for, our outlays will be definitely within the full employment revenues. We're sure of that. That has been held on. We're suspecting. In terms of the size of the deficit, we've said $20 billion, it won't be anywhere near $35 billion. It'll be less than $25 billion. I think it's a mistake for anybody to get a pin down some number right now, because in about a week and a half, we'll have the figures. June is the biggest month for outlays and intakes. So if you say something right now, you're liable to look foolish a week and a half or 2 weeks from now.
I just love it if you do it right. This president's
bill. In fiscal 72, remember, we projected 11.6 billion deficit based on a GNP that's probably a little higher than we're going to get. So that will enlarge the deficit somewhat, and then the congressional action so far, mainly Social Security, but also other things, enlarged it by 7 to 8 billion. So we'll have a large deficit in fiscal 72, and the job of keeping 72 within the full employment revenues is much more difficult. Set 73 is going to be, we're in the midst of our budget discussion. We've had one go around with the president. We have another coming up. Fiscal 73, you know, Mr. President, it's going to be another tough year. But things can be out of control if everything the Democrats want to have done gets done. Things like sustaining the veto the other day in the Senate all helps.
I sort of feed in the song. You think it's probably going to be 38 and right back to
the first week. Of course, we still have a sustained crowd of our Republican votes.
Mr. President, may I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
George, first let me give you some good news. The Public Works Appropriation Bill is coming out under the budget. Next, would you care to comment on the wage settlements as they may affect prices in the future? The vote seems to be about 30 to 35% increase over a period of 3 years, and it's difficult to see how this will have some effect on the price structure, which could also have a potential effect on the whole economy.
There's no doubt about the fact that that's a problem. On the other hand, I don't think it need overwhelm the economy. The structure of these wage settlements is tremendous front-end loading. The CAN settlement has kind of set the pace. Aluminum is in that ballpark. Phone is in that ballpark. Copper is in that ballpark. We expect that some others will be in that ballpark. Now, take the phone. The first year is a 16% increase, taking everything together. The second year is a 3% increase. The third year is a 3% increase. Then they add a cost of living escalator for those second 2 years. Now, how much upward wage movement will there be in those second 2 years? Well, that's going to depend on what happens to this consumer price index. And right now, it's running much lower than it was a year ago. And I think that suggests one reason why it's very important to be conscious of the inflationary pressure in both drafts. The productivity side of it is very important. Productivity is rising now at a pretty good clip compared with last year and the year before. And that's something to expect during expansion. The wage average hourly earnings across all of industry, that is across all of the economy, let me put it that way, have not been rising in their rate of increase. They've been going at about a 7% level. And I wouldn't be surprised if that will come down a little bit. Remember that these big wage settlements that you hear about all the time, and that are a problem, and that are difficult, nevertheless, don't cover a large proportion of the labor force. We have employed about 75 million people. In unions, there are about 18, 19 million people. In these contracts that are being negotiated this year, there are about 5 million people. So I think a little perspective here is called for. Bargaining calendar, let me just make one other point. On the bargaining calendar, last year was a very heavy year, and this year is a very heavy year, both quantitatively visibility of the bargainers. Next year, quantitatively, the number of workers covered is about half of this year. And the industry's bargaining are somehow not as visible. They don't have the same impact.
Cool. Although what you say is absolutely true about the number of workers involved, doesn't this have an effect of lifting the wages of the whole workforce?
Some of it, but they
come along.
Well, the union and non-union rates move in different ways. They don't move right parallel to each other. And there is an impact of non-union competition. We see that particularly
when you have a somewhat higher rate of unemployment. You see, that's of course a restraint. And at the present time, the non-union increases are considerably below the parallel union increases. It's the other way around. The rate of unemployment is extremely low. And that's one of the reasons the unions are so greedy at the moment. But in the period when unemployment was very low because of the war, the unions didn't do any better for their people than the non-union people because the demand was so great. Now the demand is slightly lower. I mean, because of the unemployment factor. And so that's another gradual. It's a significant fact, I think, but it's not as great as
the construction trade unionists came around to see me, and they confirmed that by pointing out that they're getting big settlements, but now almost 50% of the contracts are going to non-union, so they're getting settlements and not getting the wages.
And this has a big impact on this construction statement.
So that's one reason that our own construction trade thing, while it hasn't accomplished as much as we'd like, it's accomplished more than we expected. There's a chance of bringing down the rate from 16 to what?
Well, they've been running, averaging about 8 or 9.
8 or 9, yeah.
It's summer high still.
I was just going to say, Mr. President, that this all sounds very encouraging, even though a 31% increase in wages over 3 years doesn't sound like a really compelling question. Over and beyond that, political factor, which I'm supposed to be dealing with, every time we get out of the field anyway, so this is what comes back to the economics. And let me just give you one example, if I may. We had a survey done rather recently in a Midwest state, which you carried a couple of times. And the big issue were high prices and inflation. And the question was whether or not they disagreed with your economic policy. 67% disagreed with your economic policy compared to 23% that agreed. Now, this is a tough one if it's going to be the primary issue next year. And somehow, if things are going a lot better than has been displayed, then people are all learning about it. And they haven't learned about it yet. I don't know how you make it visible to them, particularly if they're unemployed.
And Peter, that raises a question I wanted to ask whether George would comment on Janeway and other people's predictions of the 70-cent inflation rate.
I don't see how they can be wrong. And I must say that Janeway and some others have a history of making extreme predictions. And one fine day they might be right, and they really would look terrific when they do something nobody else knew. But I don't see how that will occur.
I would like to try to ask Peter. I've been doing some hard campaigning in Michigan. I don't know how typical Michigan is, but the automobile industry is supposed to be a bellwether, and the rosy outlook, George, of course, is not apparent back in the hinterland yet. This is true when you talk to businessmen, top businessmen, and everybody else. The unemployment situation is not improving. I don't know when it's going to, but I hope one of these days these rosy predictions will turn into reality.
Well, I think I've at least tried here to say something about prospects, but mainly to describe the first 6 months. And I think we can see things like this decline in the layoff rate from 2.2 per 100 to 1.5 per 100. That's a big change. That's about the way it was in late 1969. along and through there, that's a fairly low rate, exception, the statistics are rising. The expansion, if you talk to businessmen, I find the ones that talk to a retailer, talk to Sears, Montgomery Ward, Penny, Jewel T, retail, they are just astounded by what's going on.
I understand that the rate of consumer saving today is at an all-time high of 8.4%. If you relate that to the period of 6 months following the trough of recession, compare this period that we're now in with the 53, 54, 58, 59, and 60, 61 periods, that it's a historic high. You put that together with what Bob Griffin and some of the others mentioned, and I don't think anybody did mention the Harris poll for the month of June showed that by 63% to 23% margin, the American people believe we're still in a recession. And I showed you a headline from the second largest city in Illinois that unemployment is 7.7% up there, the highest in 10 years. I just don't feel that in the general public today there is this basis of confidence that it is working. And I'm deeply disturbed that now that Mr. Mills has become an active presidential candidate, apparently, with the kind of performance that he put on television on Sunday, where he's talking about producing his own package of fiscal stimulus, that they just may run away with the roses on this particular issue. And I would just, Mr. President, have the temerity to make this suggestion that the thing that I think, and I saw a University of Michigan consumer research survey that indicated that one reason the American people don't have confidence today is the very passivity of the policy that we are following. And that even if the administration were to try something and fail at this point in the way of an incomes policy that would do something about holding down these 31% increases, I think that we would get some credit, and at least we'd be able to point our finger and say, well, it didn't work because labor wouldn't cooperate, it didn't work because management didn't cooperate. But at this point, I just think that the average American doesn't think that we're doing anything, he doesn't think that things are working. As a result, I don't find the degree of confidence in 1971 being a good year that you've expressed. And I say that with the greatest respect and regard to you, George, that anyone could possibly have.
What's the greatest number of people who are ever in the labor force compared to today?
Well, we're at an all-time high.
Percentage-wise, how does that work out? We know the all-time high is number of people today. Someone brought that up to me the other day. We were not getting across the idea that there are more people employed today than ever before.
John, I would say this, that I don't think it's correct to describe the policies as passive. Not at all.
Well, that's what we do
looking at it from the standpoint of a policy for expenses. The kind of deficits that we have are very large. And these were put forward, and I might say, at least among some members of this group, questions. Put forward as a short tool for an expansion tool, but with some restraint on it. So that's the expansion side of it. And I think that the restraint side, and not just going overboard, is in the long run what is going to do something about the inflation. The figures show that the inflation is down, it's still a problem. And my own private guess is that by this time next year, as between the issues of unemployment and as the economy expanding and so on the one hand, and inflation on the other hand, that inflation is likely to be a much more sensitive and difficult issue. And this expansion is going to carry forward and people will be getting employed. With the exception of certain areas, it's an aerospace problem, Southern California provinces are difficult. Machine schools are always way up and then way down. And I know that's what hit Rockford, Illinois. That's a machine tool town. And so that's a tough situation there.
Well, at first we could easily solve it. The $1,300,000 who were in Vietnam and the defense forces and defense plants were presently in the labor force, they had their jobs, the unemployment rate would be 4.4%. Now, what we're really saying here is that, which of course is a very offensive thing at this point, but we must also recognize that the whole history since World War II, our Democratic friends have never had unemployment in the 4% area without war. What we're trying to accomplish is to get unemployment down without war. And I repeat, if the 1,300,000 who were in the armed forces when we came in, or in defense plants, we're still in unemployment now, would be 4.5%. We have no problems. And everybody around here would say, isn't it great we don't have unemployment? And everybody else, a few others, would say, it's too bad we're losing 300 a week rather than having casualties of 11, which they'll be this week, or none, which we hope they will see. So I wouldn't be particularly defensive on that issue if we have to put it in a political context. On the other side of the coin is that in terms of an economy, I'm keenly aware of the fact that what really matters is what happens. It depends upon whether the guy feels that things are getting better, whether there are more jobs, whether he's and so forth. And on this particular point, we have a highly expansionary budget. In fact, many believe too expansionary. That's the point that your friend Evans and Novak were making. But when you have a deficit that will run in the neighborhood of $20 billion, what's the purpose of it? Well, we don't particularly like deficits. The purpose of it, of course, is to take up this slack created by the fact that we wound down the wars and wound down the defense plans, and we're going to have it again next year. And so there's the explanation for that. And then once that comes, slack is taken up, and you get back on a peacetime economy and relative full employment, something that the Democrats never been able to produce they've never produced it at all in this century. The record also showed that, remember, we all thought the New Deal solved the Depression. You know how many unemployed there were in 1940 before we got to the war? 9 million. After 8 years of pump priming on their part. Now, what I'm getting at is that we're trying to do something that has never been accomplished by our Democratic friends. That is, let's have high employment, low unemployment, and have it without war. I think we're going to make it. We have a difficult period right now. It's a period when the economy is moving up. We don't believe that the pessimists are right. We believe that the unemployment will soar to 7 or 8 or 9%. We believe that it is now in the place where it eventually will be reflected in terms of a downturn. It isn't going to come instantly. It's a tough problem to realize. Now, the question of whether we go on what John Anderson suggested, what he calls an activist course. We're activists in terms of our employment and in terms of our spending. That's most concerning. We are also very activists in terms of our individual nature and the settlements. I mean, we're arm twisting the construction trades and we're working on steel people. Those are the ones that count. Those are really the only big ones that matter. The others, when you talk about basically an incomes policy, the difficulty with it is that you have to consider is applying it and saying, look, boys, let's everybody have say that we're going to have only 4% wage increase and 4% and 2% price increase. That's fine. In 3 months, everybody knows it fails. Then what do you do?
And you have to wage and price controls, and what do you do? Well, that'll help on the unemployment field. It'll help quite a bit, because you see, you're taking $48,500 to retool OPA. That's how many we're in, we got rid of. So what we're really talking about here is whether we can, and it's a question of confidence, in terms of we have to resolve reinstate confidence among people, but what we, without question, that's a major problem. It's a major political problem. We have to look at situations. We see it over the next year. It is our belief, based on what we see now, that the economy, third and fourth quarter, will continue to move up, and that will be reflected as we move toward the last of the year in a gradually receding unemployment rate. And that in 1972, that process will continue. No one can ever be sure about a free economy. That's, of course, its weakness and its strength. But it's our belief, from what we have seen, that this is the case. I actually have considered moving in some of these other areas. Let's have an incomes policy, or let's have which basically means, instead of telling everybody that they want to hold down the prices and their wages and so forth and so on. Or let's go to a wage price freeze. You know, we could do that under the law that the Congress has passed. The problem is, how is it enforced? Or should we now move on a tax reduction front? There, of course, we're somewhat what Mr. Mills may want to bring up, and we'll have to play that game if it becomes necessary, as we'll see. But at the present time, what we believe is the policies that we have adopted are working, and that they will be reflected as the year goes on in increasing employment. Toward the end of the year, as we go toward the end of the year, a gradual reduction in unemployment, and as far as the inflation front is concerned, as George has pointed out, that will continue to be a difficult problem, because it means as the economy expands, it is always inflationary. It's a question of keeping it under control. But there are not many good choices at this particular point. As I said, the easy one is just to tool up the defense plan again.
Mr. President, nothing's been said about this as kind of an ancient doubt. Is the continuing serious imbalance of payments of trade likely to precipitate a crisis of confidence that would require some domestic accommodation?
I'm not an expert on that.
There's no doubt about the fact that there's a problem in the international trade area. And at the same time, I think it's not something to go wild about. We can expect, for example, if you look at the second quarter figures, our net export position, that is exports minus imports, deteriorated sharply. Why? Well, three reasons. First of all, there was steel inventory buying. Second, the West Coast longshore strike, which was anticipated, caused inventory building in our area. Probably most important is the fact that our economy is expanding relative to the economies in our trading partners. And when that is true, it's almost like an index of the relative strength of expansion, that tends to draw exports here and to discourage exports, imports, or our exports to other countries. Now, beyond that, I think there is this basic problem of U.S. industries being challenged and perhaps needing some respite, as the President's trying to do in the textile industry and the shoe industry, and we're negotiating this extension of the agreement in the steel industry. Get a little respite here, but basically industries have to say, we better figure out how to compete. And a lot of it is not all this low labor business that you hear so much about. Unless you were information to me, that you people say they're going to go buy a foreign car. Why? Because it's cheaper? No. Because it's better made. It doesn't fall apart. There was been some care and workmanship and things like that. And I know I've talked to the auto people, and they say the thing that disturbs them about the Toyota is it's a darn good car. Now, I think that's true. That is, it's something for auto workers individually to get more conscious of, and auto managements to get more conscious of, that they better concentrate on making these little cars good cars. Same with the steel people. And there, we have a real problem there, and it needs to be called to people's attention. They need to be given some help. So that's the way I would look at that.
Will the passage of this amended export-import bank legislation have a helpful impact of any significance on our foreign trade?
It should be helpful, and the sense in which it's helpful is that it, as you know, it works through an interest subsidy. And before long, we'll be subsidizing practically all exports, giving a little interest subsidy to them. So it's in effect an export promotion program that gives a little financial break. And so a little financial break will help. Just how much difference it will make in the next year or so, I think it is a question. Because the Ex-Im Bank has really had ample budget authority, so they haven't used their budget authority in the last year or so. But they certainly will have a freewheeling situation, and Henry Carnes, as you know, is a very enterprising guy. And there's no telling he may turn the export world upside down with a complete free hand here. I hope so.
Mr. President,
yeah, I beg your pardon. Yes, sir. Let me just say I am keenly aware of the problem we have politically on this particular Michigan, for example, is about 4 points above the national average. California is. Rock, Illinois, in general, is a little less than the national average, about 4.8. And Illinois, Ohio, Pennsylvania, the really troublesome areas that happens are these ones that I mentioned. But we're keenly aware of it, and we're not smoking any. Kid ourselves about the things that are like that. I think it is important, however, to remember, at least to have in mind, that there are problems, that also a great deal of the psychology of the country is affected by what people constantly hear. If they hear, how many unknowns retail sales have gone up? Retail sales, of course, is the most significant thing. But if you really want to look at what pulls an economy retail sales, how many have known that inventories, the retail sale inventory balance was out of balance? Well, you see, the point is that in terms of futures, that's what really matters. When I say really matters, that can't continue. You can't continue to have retail sales going up at incidentally, the numbers in July will be at least first weeks in July. We can't get that happening without inventories eventually being affected. And even between tools. But the difficulty is, John, doesn't come in 1 month, 2 months, 6 months from now. And of course, there's a lot of talk to be done. But to the extent, we're not asking that any of you try to go out and say that the figures are better than they are. I do think it is important to point out our strengths. One, that we are accomplishing what our Democratic friends never accomplished. They had unemployment, low unemployment, but they had it with war. And we're going to get it with peace. If we didn't still have the war, regard to the other areas of the economy is moving up, and that we are, that's and third, the administration is keenly aware and concerned with the problems of unemployment, problems in the process, are acting in various fields. It's a, it's, I know it's a hard sale to make, but we're faced with a barrage of, particularly among the groups we usually talk to, you know, a barrage of people who are generally reading financial pages and the rest of the various news. And we just try to give you some of the good figures, not for the purpose of putting a more optimistic light on facts that don't serve. No, talk ourselves out of this sort of situation. But I think we should have the facts that are favorable as well as those that are unfavorable. And we'd like to see that you get them. One of the reasons tonight is bringing the day was partial to that purpose, but we've got to get it a little better for them.
Mr. President, there's one example, I think, of the administration taking an action which, at least in our state, is helpful, this Mack truck deal. $1 billion. I know of a subcontract, not in my district, but adjacent to this, where a $50 million machine tool contract has been made, and I just hope this kind of action is going to continue, because a $1 billion contract, as I understand, is the total, can have and will have a very beneficial impact on the economy as a whole, as well as our export trade.
Mr. President, somebody mentioned Chairman Mills talking about the tax stimulation. I think it's important to meet that with our revenue sharing proposal, which really offers much earlier stimulation. On a sort of a front-end load basis rather than the delayed impact of what he's talking about as a sort of a Kennedy formula of tax stimulation. He's sitting on $5 billion worth of stimulation up there. And if it can be jarred loose, that's early payout and at real definite and identifiable points in the
unemployment implications.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah,
it sure has.
One reason I think
I was trying to get across is the fact that there are two ways to look at it. One is the way it really is, and the other is the way people think it is.
Sure.
And politically, politically speaking, they say an iceberg is 9/10 under the water and 1/10 above. As far as I can see, this policy, which I have with this agreement, is all below the water, and then there's none of it up above. And we need to get some moved up above the water so that people can see that. And I think if we just don't have confidence. And your point about the war is a point that needs to be made every day by every Republican, and it's true, it's balanced.
They won't print it, but you can make it to your live audience and stand on television.
Right.
Stick it with them.
But the people do understand.
Every time you make it, the reporters will drop their pencils, but you go ahead and make it.
I don't think you applaud the deficit. I don't see how Republicans can go out and beat our chests over having deficits. But they do understand restraint. And I think that the administration is doing everything it can, as John Anderson suggested, as I have suggested many times, to hold down wages and prices. But I think that people do understand that, and politically it would be good.
Both the steel and construction.
All of them. I think you can't set patterns and we can.
But I mean, you've got to take them when they come up.
Yes.
We have one on the wage question. We have a couple of things that are going to be facing people in Congress, I think. One is the wage reward bill, if you're familiar with, which by inserting extra steps in the wage structure winds up piling on top of comparability increases another, depending on how many steps, 6, 8, 10%. Now that will test the mettle of people in Congress about what the lady is up to. I think another point where this wage picture will have a dramatic impact impact is in the minimum wage. That seems, that flurried up a couple of months ago, seems to have quieted down a little bit, but it'll be back. An immediate increase to $2 an hour as of January 1 next year, Chairman Mills has proposed, would have a big impact throughout all of the lower end of the wage structure of the United States, and would definitely push up the costs. So there's another point in time where the wage picture will get some strain.
And particularly, they say the minimum wage is particularly affect this area of unemployment. That is so volatile to people. First people, you say, well, if you take somebody 16, 17, without one's job, who's never had one, so you've got to pay them $2 an hour. It just means it's not going to be higher. They just give overtime to other people for it. And it's just dynamite for this thing to move it up the track market. So I'm talking politically for $2.
You don't want to give somebody $2 an hour. Who can live on less than $2 an hour?
What's that?
It'll rally fast. We gotta figure out what to do a bit fast. If they decide they want to pass it, they can throw a bull down.
Sometimes there are things with everything.
It was like the old age, the rules commission could kill things.
Well, the Secretary of Labor has gone out with a proposal that's a constructive effort. Doesn't just stand and patch. Make his head, but tries to meet some of these problems so that it isn't as though you're empty-handed as far as the administration position is concerned. On the defense spending and the president's point about almost 1.5 million people in the labor force, a couple of years ago we were in the armed forces and defense plans. I think one point here is that there has been that big impact on the economy, and there has been a decline in federal purchases of goods and services because of this and things associated with it. The bulk of that impact has been taken now. There'll still be some drifting downward in the size of the armed forces, probably, although that's about stabilized. And the federal purchases curve is, I think, is at a low point in the second quarter of this year. And that will tend to pick up. So we'll start to have an increase there, whereas we've been having decreases over the past 2 years almost. And that will help us. So there are a lot of things that are kickers here, if we can hold up.
Mr. President.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions around the country on the game plan, and I don't never had it defined. Maybe there isn't any such thing. I think lately, if the game plan works, we're all right. But it goes an extra inning for probably difficulty politically. And I think it'd be very helpful to me and I think others who do a lot of traveling. We had some good, solid information where we can make the positive points and keep repeating that on the president. This is, the Democrats now have shifted their strategy. They see the war ending and they've now alerted all the press around the country to what they've been saying to hit us with the economy. And wherever you go, the first question you have is the economy and unemployment and other things. And it'd be very helpful to have what you've given us this morning plus some other material.
One thing you might take a look at, unaccustomed as I am to promoting the Washington Post, is the piece that Herb Stein had in Sunday's financial section. He was a guest columnist. And it's just a darn good statement.
I had him rather than Rowan.
Yeah, well, apparently Rowan asked him to write a column on Rowan was on vacation. He wrote a very good one. And you might also look in Newsweek at Milton Friedman's column. One 3 weeks ago on the same thing, and we can send those around.
Yes, one thing that you, as we, because I guess we better talk to you, one thing that we're raising a little bit, that you can be sure of, the dramatic impact of not only the China announcement, but also what may eventually happen, what they know is going to happen. One way or another on Vietnam, is that any true politician on the other side now moves
domestic side. They always want to talk about their, where they, what they think is their issue.
Now, I would strongly suggest we should continue something about ours. I must remember, they don't want to talk about these issues. They will not want to talk by the time you get to the election. I'm sure they don't want to. We must continue to, and we must be prepared to meet the effectiveness of their attack on what they think is their issues, which is not the economic issues. We always work, everybody will, and they talk about what they want, we talk about what we want. And each has a subsidiary line here too. I think we can give you, the economic thing is so difficult to put it in simple terms without frankly being overly optimistic or pessimistic for that matter. I think a few good hard numbers and facts, maybe a talking sheet of a page or two rather than a long column, what's needed. Here are points and positive points about the economy. Our people can have that. And then recognizing too, we've got to do everything we can with our national spokesman.
But the economy and the final analysis, what counts is what happens.
And if the economy moves up, unemployment moves down, the issue's dead. If it doesn't move up, unemployment goes up, we're in real trouble. And when we talk about our game plan, the plan is one that has for its purpose, and we think will accomplish the purpose of the economy moving up and unemployment moving down. Not this month, next month, we're not saying that you can't put a projection in those terms, but in terms of this year and next year. So, we'll hold off. Thanks very much.